I usually reserve, and I still do, I usually reserve 2 o'clock following lunch, since you're all awake and you're all pretty much on your game, for what I consider to be the most important thing that we're going to do at any given convention. Over the years, we've had many different speakers at 2 o'clock. This year, we have another speaker at 2 o'clock. And I consider this to be one of the more important things that you're likely to hear this weekend, other than what I have to say and what Anil has to say. Now, having said that, though, I think there are other ways to introduce the gentleman who will be addressing us in a few moments, but I'm going to pause for a second and let Mike do it.
It is my great privilege to present the governor of the state of New York, David A. Patterson.
Now, hold on, guys. There's still more. Hold on, guys. Thank you. Thank you, Shelley. Hold on. Yeah. It gets better. Come on. I haven't heard Shelley get that much applause in a long time. It gets better.
A brand new ride home. He worked for you in Albany. He's New York's voice. He's your voice. The governor has returned to office. His new office. Welcome to the Governor David Patterson Show, New York's only local news talk in the afternoon. Now, the man with the inside track on the tri-state.
One more after this, folks.
Here is Governor David Patterson.
I am David.
What? You got one more blast? You got one more blast from the past?
Governor David Patterson.
I am David Patterson, and I am the governor of New York State.
No! Ladies and gentlemen, there's no more I can say. I give to you, for whatever he cares to say to us, our friend, our brother, our colleague, and one of our newest members, Governor David A. Patterson.
Thank you. I was honored to be given the opportunity to speak at our national convention in Orlando on July the 8th, and people liked my speech. The only two people that said anything somewhat critical were Dr. Mark Maurer and Carl Jacobson, who reminded me that I had exceeded the 15-minute time limit, and thanks to those introductions and your applause, I have now exceeded it again. So thank you so much for having me today.
And do it, play it again, Sam.
I thought I would give some encouragement to one of the scholarship winners, Tommy Needham, and I wanted to congratulate him, and I heard him from the back of the room this morning say that he wants to be a prosecutor. So I wanted to tell him a little bit about being a prosecutor, because I was one in the Queens DA's office for 2 years. And it was my first day, not my first day in the office, but the first time I ever went to court that I'll never forget. It was May 20th, 1983. May 20th is my birthday. And I came in and my boss said to me, "What would you like to do for your birthday?" And I said, "I don't know, you know, maybe after work." It was Friday. I said, "Maybe after work we'll have drinks or something." And he said, no, "You should do something on your birthday that you've never done before." So I was thinking about a lot of things that didn't relate to work. And so he said to me, "I think you should go to court on your birthday." And I'd been in the office 2 weeks. And I said, "No, Al, that's okay. That's all right. We'll do something like that some other time." He goes, no, you're going to go to court." He said, "Let me explain what's going to happen. There is a defendant who is mentally ill. He is unable to assist his counsel. And as you know, under the Constitution, if a person can't assist their counsel, you can't try them. And so you're just going to get up and describe this to the judge. The defense attorney already knows this. He'll agree with you. That's all you've got to do. And then we're going to go out and have drinks for your birthday." So I went into court. And they called the case, and as assistant district attorney, I got up and said, "Your Honor, this defendant, I'll never forget his name, Ronald Galella, has been found by two appointed psychiatrists to be unable to assist his attorney, and therefore, with a reasonable degree of medical certainty, since these two psychiatrists are board certified, they deem him unfit to proceed, and under Section 730 of the criminal procedure law, we will remand him to a psychiatric institution. And the defense gets up, and he says, Your Honor, we concur with the prosecutor, and but before we remand Mr. Galella, he said he has written a letter to Your Honor, and he will abide by whatever decision you make, but he'd like you to review his letter. And they pass his letter up, and somehow I get this feeling that something is about to go terribly wrong. Because my boss would excoriate attorneys who did not get everything that the defense got. Like if the defense had something, we had to have it too, if it was shared with the judge. So I said to the clerk, I said, by the way, I'd like to see that letter. He's incredulous. He said, you would like to see the letter? I said, yes, I'd like to see the letter, and I'd like to see the letter now. Because my boss liked real assertive, you know, tough prosecutors. So they give me the letter, and I know I can't read this letter. But I thought, but they don't know that I can't read the letter. And look, this guy is going to an institution. So I took the letter, held it all the way up to my face, and I kind of moved it back and forth for a while. And then I feel someone tugging on the letter, and it's the clerk. He's taking the letter back. And I took the letter back. I said, I'm not finished. And I could hear the groans in the courtroom, like, wow, this guy doesn't take any stuff, you know? So I go back, and I'm kind of looking at the letter. And then this other attorney from my office comes up, because I can feel a murmur around me. And he says, David, give them back the letter. He said, the defendant, apparently, he just wrote a page full of the letter G. You spent the last 5 minutes looking at a row of G's. So I hand the letter back. The judge, Seymour Rotker, I'll never forget his name. He said, the only thing more fascinating than the letter itself is the prosecutor's appreciation for it. Do you remember that scene in The Wizard of Oz where the lion runs out of the chamber and dives through a window? Well, I felt like that lion. And I was even afraid to go back and walk out of the courtroom with my boss. But it was what my boss said to me when we got outside the courtroom that I'll never forget. He said, work's over, let's go out for drinks. And Tommy, you'll be a great prosecutor. I am aware of your achievements so far. If I'm ever arrested and brought into the courtroom and you're there, I will hang myself in my cell and save you the trouble. Now, we've got something we need the governor to do in the present, but we need to clear something up in the past. Because I was petitioned by this organization and others in the blindness field to expand and to remove obstacles to the visit vendor, also known really as the vendor program. And around this time last year, I signed into legislation an expansion of the program. We removed all the obstacles that we felt were impeding the process of this program. And I don't mind telling you, I'm very proud of it. Now, but here's what I'm not proud of, and because of that, I today formally call on the Commission for the Blind to expand the effort. We already now have the legal capability, but two or three facilities a year is not enough. There's got to be a more aggressive approach. There are people unemployed. This is entrepreneurship. This is an opportunity for people to make money. This is an opportunity for this program to be expanded. And so, since we are here today, if you happen to see anybody from the commission, tell them that it's time to expand it and tell them that I said so.
They'll be on later.
Now, I would also like to let everyone know, I was telling Anil about this a little earlier today. I don't know if you all are aware of it, but tomorrow in Harlem, they have the African American Day Parade. And why would I bring that up here? Because guess who is the Grand Marshal of the African American Day Parade? Nope. You're wrong. It's not me. We have diversity at the African American Day Parade. We have affirmative action. Governor Andrew Cuomo is the, he will be the, and so under the current lobbying law, I am forbidden to communicate with the second floor on issues or any type of lobbying. But I'm not forbidden to march in the African American Day Parade next to the Grand Marshal. And it, you know, it takes about an hour to march that distance. And you know, a lot of things could come up in that hour, like, you know, I read something in the Daily News today. You know, the way I read the Daily News today is I call up Newsline and I can type it in. And, you know, Governor, you're doing these great things, and I'd hate to be unable to read about the great things you're doing, because then I can't mention them every place I go. And as you know, I've got a radio show now, and I have to talk about these things, and I can only talk about what I read. If I don't read anything, then I guess there's nothing for me to say. And so, I'm going to be marching in the African American Day Parade. It's probably the first time that the African American Day Parade got a big applause from the National Federation of the Blind, but I can't wait to get there. And finally, and I think tragically, I would be remiss if I did not talk about the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 and the inclusion of Section 14C in it. And what I would just say is, you know, in 1987, we were going to pass a hate crimes bill. And that bill got held up for 13 years. And the reason it was held up is because a legislator by the name, an assemblyman by the name of Roger Green and myself, refused to vote for the bill because in the protected classes of race, religion, age and disability, national origin, it did not include sexual orientation. And our contention was that we were not going to vote for a bill that excluded people to be protected against violence. And finally, by the year 2000, when we got the Senate Republicans to include sexual orientation, we had a hate crimes bill. And sometimes it seemed like it was never going to pass. And the governor even offered to sign the bill without sexual orientation. And he even went to the gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender community and asked for their permission for him to sign it. And they said, this is wrong, but we'll do it for the other protected classes. And we said, no, because we wouldn't really feel protected unless everyone is protected. Mm-hmm. And so, so I say that to say that the well intentions that Governor Mario Cuomo had and the well intentions that even the leaders of the gay and lesbian community had, you know, sometimes the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act is an example of it. Because I get what they were trying to do. They wanted to open the door. They wanted to get the door open so that more disabled people could actually work. And I don't know. I'm not going to judge them. Probably some great advocates worked on this. But those advocates are turning over in their graves, and some of them are probably still around. Sorry, I knocked Carl's gavel over, and you know there's a $100 fine that you have to pay to the Federation, so I'll make my check out.
Knock it off again.
I'll have my check at dinner.
Knock it off again.
I tell you what, Carl, for $200, I'm throwing the gavel all the way back there.
There you go.
$200, contribution that just came in.
Here's my jacket.
You can give out four more door prizes on me. I'll have that check tonight at the dinner, I promise.
There you go.
So, while we're clearing that up.
Here's my chair. You want to throw
back,
that too?
Yeah, back to the, boy, I think I can go with the 15 minutes now. What do you think? So, but very seriously, and I think this is endemic to our entire movement, the insult that in the workforce Workforce Investment Act, I can't even say it right now, in its reauthorization, Title V and Section 511, they actually want to expand what was discrimination built into the Fair Labor Standards Act, which established minimum wage. That's what's going on here. And it was amazing because Anil along with a couple of others, went to see some people in Washington, and Anil's been in everybody's office about this, is that they say these things, well, we thought we were helping. All right, fine, you were wrong. You're not helping. And you know, when I was governor, you will not believe how many cases got brought before our Department of Labor where employees pay people less than the minimum wage who are supposed to get it right now. So if you open the door to employers to pay less than the minimum wage, and then they say, but it gets more people working. Well, guess what?
So does slavery.
We had full employment during slavery. Everybody was working, but nobody made any money.
Three meals,
roof over your head. You know, it's amazing what an insulting process that is, and that's why this organization protested in 22 different venues all around the country. Even some of the greatest champions of opportunity for the disabled, like Senator Harkin, just doesn't get it. And then they said, and this is really when, you know, this is really when the insults are getting below the belt. Well, you know, some other blindness organizations are very much for this. Yeah, they're making money off of it too. You know, there were a lot of slaves that lived in the house that thought slavery was pretty good. They lived in the house with the master. And they never seemed to wonder why they halfway looked like the master. So, the reality is the reality is that this is outrageous in 2011. And you know something? In 1987, when we were talking about the inclusion of sexual orientation into the hate crimes bill, I did not know about the Federal Labor Standards Act. I didn't know about it. I didn't know about it last year. And I think the general view was that society was converting on its own. And so therefore, it was what they call a void under the law. In other words, void for vagueness. That at this point, you know, it's there, but, you know, that's probably not going to be a problem. You know, like, for instance, in the Constitution, there's Article 4, Section 2, Clause 3. It is the provision that provides for the recovery of runaway slaves. So obviously, it's not in use. I don't know, though, but with Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann, Governor Perry, I mean, there are some people who would probably want to start utilizing that clause, but let me just get back to the blindness issues for now. But in so many ways, because of the sort of benevolent way that we are treated by people at times, sometimes actually the discrimination and the degradation is actually worse. Because a velvet club, you're getting hit over the head, but at first it doesn't feel so bad. But the reality is that we have people who are blind and in other disability communities who work real hard and get nothing. And then their families are manipulated into thinking that this is good. And it is so angering and so aggravating that I think this is a threshold in our movement. We have to win this fight. Absolutely. Losing is not possible. And we are going to call the roll on our federal and state legislators. And we want to know, are you for us or against us? And we are going to kick butts and take some names. Because this is the elementary core of other discrimination that we receive and that we feel and that we know is happening. Because if a person can't work and get the same things that other people get, and by the way, when did they come to the conclusion that the disabled can't do as good a job as anyone else? Why was that almost sanctioned in the legislation? Now, I'm here to tell you, I was governor of this state. I had people right on the second floor. There's nothing wrong with them physically, but they sat on their hands and did nothing every day. And I was governor. I know that. I wish we had sub-minimum wage in the governor's office. I could have saved the state millions of dollars a day cutting salaries for people who institutionally never didn't want to do any work. So why are we automatically relegating a ghetto into the Minimum Wage Act? It is an outrage. And people need to really get angry about this, because as long as this section from 1938, and then, just to rub it in, they want to expand it by putting in the section 511, which expands it. This happened in 2011, not in 1938. This happened right now. And this, we're just trying to help. People will kill you with kindness. And in this case, they'll really kill you. Now, unless they put a bill in that says that rent, supplies, tuition will be divided by the percentage of disability salary for people who work under the subminimum wage, until they put that bill in, 14C has got to go. 14C has got to go. 14C has got to go. Thank you very much.